Trendstorm.
Our final topic, picked by you, dear listeners, earlier in a poll on our Facebook page, is Pakistan, IMF versus CPEC, focusing on whether Islamabad's forthcoming IMF-requested assistance will impact CPEC. Pakistan has officially turned to the IMF for assistance in dealing with its financial crisis, but there are concerns that the global body might force it to curtail some of the projects that it agreed to with Beijing as part of the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor, which is the flagship of China's Belt and Road Initiative. It was reported a few months ago that the country would have to disclose information about the terms of its Chinese contracts to its requested creditors if it wants to receive their help, which is very sensitive for two primary reasons. The first is the principle involved of having to show a third party the details of privately negotiated agreements, while the second builds upon that and has to do with the possibility of other players misportraying the actual terms themselves for whatever their political reasons may be. Official Pakistani government data previously revealed that only around 10% of the country's external debt is due to Chinese loans, while a whopping 60% of it is from either multilateral financial institutions or the Paris Club, though it's the Chinese component that's the most heavily politicized both inside and outside of the country. This is because there's been a lot of fear-mongering over China's speculated geopolitical intentions with CPEC, which some allege is a form of neocolonialism through debt-trap diplomacy that seeks to turn Pakistan into another Sri Lanka by compelling it to surrender control of its infrastructure in exchange for writing off its burgeoning debt, like Colombo recently did with the controversial Hambantota port. Others say that these concerns are overblown and even deliberately misleading because of the geostrategic intent that some foreign forces have in subverting this game-changing series of multipolar megaprojects. Separating fact from fiction, CPEC project director Hassan Daoud wrote an article earlier this month titled "Removing the Mist," where he explained just how different CPEC loans are from any of China's others elsewhere along the Silk Road, which included details about their long-term financing plans and the build, operate, transfer models being employed with many of them. Mr. Daoud also importantly clarified that some of the loans that critics like to assail were actually procured by private entities and aren't the government's responsibility, so they can't reasonably be included in a tally of the state's total debt. Even so, it's worthwhile discussing the impact that Pakistan's requested IMF assistance may or may not have on the future of CPEC, if only for further debunking the many false and weaponized narratives against China's flagship Silk Road investment. So folks, this is probably one of the most interesting topics we've covered in a while because there's so much speculation about it, and I hope that this week's edition of Trendstorm will help clear the air and let you guys separate fact from fiction. So the first expert that we're going to speak to today is Mr. Syed Ali Zayed Jafri. Syed is a research associate at the Center for Security, Strategy, and Policy Research at the University of Lahore and associate editor of Pakistan Politico.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Syed, what are the roots of Pakistan's external debt crisis, and who or what is most responsible for it getting to this point?
Okay, the external debt crisis is an old one for Pakistan, and it was primarily due to the economic policies of the last government led by Nawaz Sharif and his finance minister Ishaq Dar, and their approach was to, you know, run the economy by taking loans and using it for building high infrastructure projects, and then focusing on the development of projects that required foreign funding, and then a lot of the projects were subsidized by the government. So that really dented our foreign exchange reserves, and at the fag end of the government, the finance ministry, artificially reduced overvalued the rupee vis-a-vis the dollar, and that put exceeding pressure on our foreign exchange reserves. And when this new government came up, it had to grapple with a deficit of about 18 $18 billion. And for that, given that the government is new, they had no other option but to go to the IMF. And because if they don't do that, and if they continue with their own focus on economic reforms, that takes a lot of time, and the government does not have the time right now to, you know, wait for the reforms to kick in and take their effect. And that's why they had to make this early call of going to the IMF, which, according to many, is a U-turn. But as I often say, that U-turn may be a politically emotional term, but in policy, these things happen. We see governments and we see entities taking, saying something else and then going against it, and nothing happens. Nothing is set in stone when you're governing a large and complex country like Pakistan. So this going to the IMF does not fall. The blame of it does not fall on the current government. Yes, if this government, even after governing, ruling for 5 years, if it goes to the IMF again in 2023, yes, then this government is to be blamed. But going to the IMF is nothing new. And the whole blame is to be levied on the PMLN government, which ruled Pakistan from 2013 till 2018.
Okay, this was very well explained, especially your emphasis on why governments need to remain flexible. And I liked how you drew a distinction between U-turns and flexibility. That was very useful to emphasize. So now, Syed, why did Pakistan have to go to the IMF for assistance and couldn't receive the necessary financial support from China, Saudi Arabia, and its other strategic partners? What's the story behind that?
Yeah, I would first like to tackle the answer regarding Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia, you know, Pakistan has been trying to maintain a balanced approach in its policy in the Middle East. While that has been very difficult, it has paid off so far. And Pakistan, ever since the end of the Yemen war, has tried to stay away from the Irani-Saudi conflagration by not sending troops and all military contingents to the Yemen conflict. Now, Pakistan has been trying to maintain this tenuous balance, but as you know, that Pakistan has approached Saudi Arabia, but to ask them for a loan would have obviously put Pakistan in a difficult position and would have challenged its balanced position in the Middle East. You know, nothing is free in this world, and if Saudi Arabia would have given them loans, it would have obviously demanded Pakistan to, you know, turn the taps off Iran, turn the taps off and on Iran. And that could have, you know, affected Pakistan's balanced approach in the Middle East, and which, given Pakistan's sectarian fault lines, would have been repugnant to the security of the country. And Imran Khan's government does not or cannot afford this at any stage of its tenure. Now this is what I feel regarding Saudi Arabia. China, yes, China is already involved in the China-Pakistan economic corridor. Asking her, asking it for a loan would have been plausible. But then again, Chinese operate differently and they focus on investments rather than loans. And so I think perhaps Pakistan also, the government of Pakistan also wants to maintain its independence and its freedom in choosing its foreign policy objectives and foreign policy approaches. So maybe again going to China and asking for a loan would have again, it would have given air to the conspiracy regarding Pakistan being a virtual Chinese colony. So I think I perceive that Pakistan wants, although it wants its friends to cooperate, but it wants to also show a bit of self-reliance or self, at least for the optics. It wants to show that, yeah, we can at least try to go on our own. So going back to China again would have sent a wrong signal.
Okay, I understand.
These are my two things.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying all this for our audience. Now, Syed, we only have about a minute left, so I have to be pretty brief. Could the IMF force Pakistan to restructure, curtail, or even outright cancel some of its CPEC projects in exchange for financial assistance? And why or why not? I know we only got a minute left, so you got to be brief, but I think it's important to address this question.
I think that the Imran government has already signaled its intent of revisiting the terms of contract of the CPEC project. And this would have been done even without IMF pressure. So I think that the government had already criticized the PMLN regime for, you know, having lopsided contract with the Chinese. So I think, yes, Pakistan may review the terms of the contract a bit or without IMF. And I think it should be done because we must, you know, enter into contracts which are beneficial to both parties rather than being lopsided. And also transparency in the project is very important for both the countries and the region and beyond. So this is my little take on this.
Syed, thank you very much. This was a comprehensive review of the reasons behind Pakistan's external debt crisis and the role that the IMF could potentially play in resolving it. Now we're going to hear what Ms. Sabana Siddiqui has to say. She's a foreign affairs journalist focusing on the Belt and Road Initiative, CPEC, and South Asia, who also works as an op-ed writer at china.org.cn, South China Morning Post, and Asia Times.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Sabana, where did the fears of IMF interference with CPEC come from, and how valid are they, especially when considering that China itself even endorsed Pakistan's request for assistance from the global body?
Well, it shouldn't have really happened. There shouldn't be such fears because Pakistan has been taking financial help from the IMF at least 14 times since 1980, and the last package ended just like 2 years ago, but there has never been any controversy. Right now, what has changed is that Pakistan and China have launched the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor project. And over here, there's a clash of U.S. and China interests in this region. And this has virtually turned Pakistan into a flashpoint nowadays. This is the reason why it is being expected that the IMF might not lose a chance to try and slow down CPEC, as it is perceived to be more of a U.S.-dominated and U.S.-influenced organization. It could make it quite difficult if it wanted to implement the CPEC, if it disapproves of the terms and conditions, or even finds the entire project non-viable and not in Pakistan's interests. In fact, Christine Lagarde has already emphasized that the IMF expects absolute transparency of all of Pakistan's debts so that its debt sustainability can be determined. But now let me make it clear that where the debts are concerned, only like 4 out of the 22 CPEC projects underway are on a concessional loan basis, while the rest are aid and more equity-based investment for which Pakistan might have given a guarantee for annual profits. But the reality is that the pending loans which are causing the problem are from the IMF and others that actually constitutes like 47% of the total amount. But considering that China itself is also a member of the IMF, maybe we are overdoing it, and it might be a little too extreme to be fearful of the IMF, because China has endorsed and approved of Pakistan's application for a bailout.
Okay, very interesting. So, Sabina, how could Pakistan's procurement of another IMF loan influence its long-term economic development strategy? And even if it doesn't affect any CPEC projects, what other changes could it prospectively lead to within the country?
Well, since a while, the IMF has been warning Pakistan that its financial risks have increased and need a lot of regulation, as its medium-term debt repayment capacity is reducing due to current account and budget deficit. It has been urging Pakistan to improve anti-money laundering and counter-terrorism financing mechanisms, so it seems to have a lot of drastic changes in mind. If Pakistan does take a $12 billion bailout package from the IMF for 3 years, like the finance minister said like a couple of days ago, as well as a $5 billion from the Asian Development Bank and World Bank, having an extremely high deficit, fast depleting foreign exchange reserves, which are hitting like less than the three-month threshold level, this arrangement would get the economy through the worst. But it is expected that the IMF delegation, which is due to arrive on November 7th, would want to place special conditions and get some policies changed. For example, the government would have to carry out structural reforms under IMF monitoring and supervision at the very least. And Moody's has recently recommended that the IMF would aid in macroeconomic rebalancing and further the Pakistan government's reforms agenda as well. But it is most likely going to be a very punishing package, and the rate of economic growth might slow down, initially, prices of electricity will spike and other utilities are expected to go up as well, as taxes and inflation should be pretty bad. The Chinese projects should proceed as planned, as infrastructure is always vital for economic growth.
Okay then, Sabina. So bearing in mind Pakistan's interesting mix of promising CPEC investments and its probable procurement of another IMF loan with all of its possible conditions, as you explained, what's your forecast for Pakistan's economic future?
Pakistan, I think, has a positive economic future. It has just hit a bad patch right now, notwithstanding the current scenario. One of the main reasons, as always, is CPEC. As more of its projects get completed and enter the operational phase, we should be able to derive economic benefits and improve our economic growth rate along the way, as these are mostly in the energy and infrastructure sector, more than half of them. Focusing on sustainability, this kind of projects usually survive. Secondly, if a thriving business environment is created, the crisis could be over in a year or two, but a lot depends on what direction the new government takes. If chronic economic issues are addressed with sincerity and new ways and means are found, a lot can happen, in my opinion. Pakistan should consider effective land reforms as well for lasting results, even though it is not a popular political decision. As for the CPEC-IMF clash of interest, a lot depends on how the Pakistan government handles it. The conditions placed by the IMF might be unbearable, and we still have to see where it goes, whether it goes ahead with the deal. Right now, the Prime Minister said that he has given indications that help from some other friendly country cannot be ruled out. Looks like some of the conditions laid by the IMF are not doable, so other options are being pursued once more.
Sabina, this was a really important interview that cleared the air of all the rumors about the IMF supposedly interfering with CPEC. It was very important to hear what you had to say, so thank you for coming onto our program.
Trendstorm.
All right, folks, if we think back on what both Syed and Sabina both share with us today, we can see that whether for better or for worse, Pakistan seems to have no choice but to request IMF assistance for resolving its external debt crisis. Now, having said that, this doesn't necessarily mean that the IMF is going to be as bad as some people are portraying it as. But as Sabina noted, there will definitely be some restrictions imposed on how Pakistan can spend the money and other aspects of the Pakistani economy. This is normal, and Pakistan has gone through this several times in the past. However, it is very unlikely that the IMF will in any shape or form interfere with CPEC. As Syed pointed out, Pakistan already seemed as though it wanted to restructure some of the CPEC deals even prior to agreeing to want to go forward with this IMF plan. So to those that believe that the IMF is going to sabotage CPEC, this just displays a lack of knowledge and understanding of what CPEC is, how important it is to Pakistan's grand strategy, and Afro-Eurasian integration as a whole. CPEC will not be stopped by the IMF. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. And with this, we end this week's edition of Trendstorm, brought to you by Radio Sputnik. It was presented by me, Andrew Korepko. Thank you for listening, and take care.